This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
This is E.O. Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams, and you're listening to the
Humanist Network
Humanist
News.
Network
Humanist
News.
Network News.
Humanist Network News.
I ain't afraid of your Yahweh. I ain't afraid of your Allah. I ain't afraid of your Jesus. I'm afraid of what you do in the name of your God.
It's October 24th, and you're listening to the Humanist Network News, an audio production by the Institute for Humanist Studies. I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
And I'm your host, Duncan Crary. If you're just joining us for the first time, and you're wondering what humanism is, humanism is a non-religious philosophy based on reason and compassion.
Happy anniversary, Duncan.
Happy anniversary, Jess. This is show number 24, and we're on a monthly schedule, so that means that at least I have been doing this for 2 years.
Good math, Duncan.
And there's maybe someone out there who's been listening from the beginning. I don't know. Might have lost us there. So what do we have to show for ourselves after 2 years?
Well, Duncan, not only do we have an all-star lineup today for our anniversary show.
That's how we're going to celebrate, yeah.
But we've also been sort of featured or awarded by...
We've gotten some kudos.
Yeah.
I was Googling ourselves online, and we noticed that The Independent, a major daily newspaper in the UK, awarded us 2 times, Critics' Choice.
That's pretty awesome.
Pat on the back.
So today, we've got Sam Harris, Richard Dawkins, Daniel Dennett, and Christopher Hitchens. Now, these four are best-selling authors who are known for being, you know, outspoken and blunt. Mm. And they've also been dubbed lately the new atheists. Mm. We've also got Brian Kelly of the Rational Response Squad. We've got Pastor Deacon Fred of the Landover Baptist Church.
Oh, boy.
And we've got an audio version of Sweet Reason.
How the heck did we get all these people, Jess?
Duncan, you've been quite busy.
Yeah.
Don't pretend that you
it's
don't
one of those
know.
Questions I know the answer to.
Most recently, Duncan, you went to the Atheist Alliance International Conference, which was held September 28th and 29th in the Crystal City, which is in the D.C. metropolitan area.
I drove down with Evan Gran, the Norwegian reporter who was on our last podcast, to the conference, and we got really lost down there in Crystal City. I kept driving like into the Pentagon, which you're not supposed to do, but we made it, and it was a stupendous event. Sold out show, and so many big names that everywhere you turned, you saw someone famous.
Now, there's been some sort of hype surrounding the scheduling of this event, right?
Well, as our listeners will recall, is this one of those questions that you know the answer to, Jess? Yeah, on HNN Podcast 10, Jess and Matt Sherry interviewed Margaret Downey, the president of Atheist Alliance International, and you asked her, you kind of held her feet to the fire. You said, why do the two major national atheist organizations hold their annual conferences on the same weekend? Because you have to choose one or the other. Margaret told our listeners that she was working on changing that date, and she did. And as a result, there were hundreds of people on the waiting list for this conference. But one of the people who made it was Ellen Johnson, who's the president of American Atheists. So I think that that atheist Cold War of sorts has finally thawed.
The last major conference that we covered was the New Humanism Conference hosted by the Humanist Chaplaincy at Harvard. And, you know, since we heard from the New Humanist, we thought it's only fair to hear from now the New Atheist side of the spectrum.
The New Humanism Conference was in part a reaction to the harsh criticisms that the New Atheists have towards organized religion. Interestingly enough, Sam Harris at the Atheist Alliance International Conference delivered a speech titled The Problem of Atheism. Now, Sam Harris is the author of End of Faith and Letter to a Christian Nation. He is known as, you know, one of the new atheists, but in his talk, he actually addressed the crowd and said that we should not identify ourselves as atheists or brights or humanists or anything else. We should simply represent ourselves as reasonable, rational people. I've been very interested in this topic, as you know, Jess. Being a skeptic means you have to also be skeptical of, say, the skeptical movement. And you have to ask yourself the million-dollar question, is there something oxymoronic in organized free thought?
Well, you had the opportunity to interview Sam Harris about this at the conference, so let's hear that now.
Sam Harris, I think that of all the speakers and all the events that have occurred so far, you made news with your talk last night. And I'd like to recap briefly and ask you some supplemental questions. So
You mentioned to the crowd that atheist as a label was it was a matter of convenience for you. People were labeling you as an atheist, and so you just said, okay, I'm an atheist. But you made a point about why you don't necessarily want to refer to yourself as an atheist. Could you recap that simply?
Sure. Yeah, well, I think it's a philosophical and a strategic error. I mean, as a matter of philosophy, atheism is not a worldview, and yet it's being construed as one by its opponents and attacked as a worldview. And people have many erroneous associations with what is entailed in not believing in God. And I think we collaborate in that misunderstanding by labeling ourselves in opposition to religion. We should notice that there are thousands, really an uncountable number of bad ideas that we all reject, and yet we don't label ourselves in opposition to them. It's something like astrology. We don't label ourselves non-astrologers. And I think we should take some instruction from that fact, because it would just be what we're doing is we're falling into the a trap, in some sense, set by religious people, because atheism as a term is so ill dignified in our culture, and so it has such bad PR that to answer to the name of atheist, in some sense, you already wins the argument for your religious opponent. It shouldn't be so, but I think we have to be wise and realize that we have a terrible PR problem. And so the question is what to do instead. And I think we can use words like reason and evidence and common sense instead. And in the same way that we would repudiate the views of astrologers if they were gaining great traction in our culture, with words like reason and evidence, we can do the same for claims about religion and, you know, the magic origin of certain books, etc.
Where does this leave organized atheism? Do you think that the atheist movement is doing inadvertently more harm than good, or what should atheist organizations do with this new idea that you have?
Yeah, well, it depends. You know, if everyone suddenly agreed with me, I'm not quite sure what we should do. I mean, we would have to change some websites and some business cards. I think we, for instance, Richard Dawkins named his foundation the Richard Dawkins Foundation for Science and Reason. I think that was the right move. I think he would have lost his potential influence if he named it the Richard Dawkins Foundation for Atheism. And it seems to me that he can say whatever he wants to say against religion until the end of time under the aegis of reason and evidence, or science and reason. And so I think maybe there is a role for being outspoken as atheists, self-labeling at the moment. Maybe that there's some transitional importance to this, but I think it's pretty clear that if we ever really succeed, if we get what we want, if we raise the standards of intellectual honesty in public discourse, if we get people to concede that they're not certain about the existence of God or the virgin birth of certain people, the world we will be in will be a world not in which everyone labels themselves atheist. It's where people cease to pretend to be certain about things they're clearly not certain about. And that's in the same way that the analogy I used in my talk was to racism, and I think it's appropriate. We don't label ourselves non-racists. We don't advocate non-racism as an ideology. We simply repudiate racism. We notice how bankrupt it is intellectually. We notice that the concept of separate races is divisive and scientifically not supportable. And so we make those arguments, and we try to extend certain standards of moral decency and common sense, never labeling ourselves. And I think that's, again, I think that's an analogy that at least seems appropriate to me.
Last night you spoke about the perhaps skeptics can be too skeptical for their own good. You talked about the benefits of meditation and extended periods of contemplation. So I'd like to take that topic a little further with religion itself as an organization. Are there aspects of organized religion that you see have a value, or maybe a secular value to them? And should atheists focus on destroying religion or reforming religion?
Well, I don't think it's so much a matter of reforming. I am of the destroy religion camp. But we have to recognize that there are certain features of human experience that are not going away, and many of them are desirable features. The fact that people can transform their lives, the fact that they can become more compassionate, the fact that they can have even self-transcending experiences. Much of this is only described in our religious traditions. I mean, religion has been the only game in town if you want to become like Jesus, whoever Jesus actually was, if you want to radically transform your relationship to other people. Religion, with more or less clarity, testifies to the possibility of self-transformation. And then it brings in a lot of Iron Age mythology and superstition and pseudoscience. And so I think we just have to recognize that as atheists, we give people the sense that we're not open to the idea that people can ever have extraordinary experiences that are important, that are not merely a matter of understanding the world factually better. And so we have to somehow conserve the data of human experience in that way and develop a scientific language for talking about what I unfortunately have no better words for and call mysticism or spirituality.
Do you plan to continue to refer yourself out of convenience as an atheist? And do you prefer a term? Last night you said maybe humanist is a better term. Did you have any intentions for the future?
Yeah, occasionally it becomes too onerous to keep fighting off the word, and I answer to when called to atheist or secularist or rationalist. But for the most part, I point out the liability of using the label. And I just, you know, when someone asks me, are you an atheist? I point out that we're both atheists with respect to Zeus, and we don't have a label to describe that lack of belief. And I think that's, ultimately, I think we have to instruct people who think that atheism is a worldview that it's not, that it's really a word almost without content. It's simply, atheism is nothing more than the, and this is, I wrote this in the letter to a Christian nation, to my mind, it's nothing more than the sounds people make when in the presence of unjustified religious dogma. I mean, you repudiate it. You say, well, I don't, you know, there's no good evidence for the Bible being the perfect work of the creator of the universe. That is atheism, but it's really just reason in action.
Sam Harris, thanks for taking the time to speak with me today.
Yeah, pleasure to meet you.
That was Duncan interviewing Sam Harris. If you'd like to read a full version of his talk at the Atheists Alliance International Conference, you can get it from samharris.org.
Hey, Jess, you know what? I got to tell you, I didn't get a chance to tell Sam Harris this, but you know, the second part of his talk focused on meditation, and he told the entire crowd, he was talking about the values of just clearing your mind, and he was saying, like, for example, you know, if I asked this entire room to just clear your mind, you know, you probably couldn't do it. Do you know, I tried it, and do you know what all I could think of during that?
Let's see. I give up, Duncan. What'd you think of?
Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Obviously, from the Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
You would. Wait,
first thing in my mind.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Choose and perish.
What do you mean, choose? We don't understand.
Choose the form of the Destructor.
Whatever we think of. Empty your heads. Don't think of anything. We've only got one shot at this.
The choice is made.
Whoa! Whoa!
The Traveler has come.
Nobody choose anything! Did you choose anything?
No!
Did you?
My mind is totally blank.
I didn't choose anything!
It just popped in there.
What? It's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
So basically, if Sam Harris were the God Gozer, I would have chosen the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man to destroy the Atheist Alliance Conference.
It does not surprise me one bit, Duncan.
Yeah.
All right. Well, up next, we've got Daniel Dennett, who is the author of Breaking the Spell, Religion as a Natural Phenomenon, and Darwin's Dangerous Idea.
I asked Daniel Dennett for his reactions to Sam Harris's talk.
Daniel Dennett, I think one of the most newsworthy aspects of the conference so far were some comments by Sam Harris last night. What are your general reactions to what Mr. Harris had to say?
Well, I think Sam's right that the term atheist is a risky term in some ways because it minimizes and marginalizes what the real issue is, which is irrationality and just a failure to respect reason. Belief in God is just one aspect of that. And so if the only thing that people think they have to deal with is this question about whether we believe there exists a God, then we lose ground on that. On the other hand, we do need labels. We do need some terms to describe ourselves, and I think that atheist is a good term, and we ought to work to rehabilitate the term in the eyes of many, along with other terms. I think that he's right that we should not just brandish the label as if that were the banner that we march under. That would be to play into their hands.
Do you think that religion needs to be destroyed or eliminated, or does religion need to be reformed?
I think that there's no practical chance of destroying or eliminating religion. I think that we should think of this actually in an evolutionary perspective and think of it as we want to evolve avirulent varieties. We want to have the toxicity of religion evolve away, and we know that this works. I mean, epidemiology has got good models of how you encourage the evolution of avirulence, and we're much better off if we recognize that these organizations are not going to be exterminated. They're going to be adjusted and encouraged to move in directions that are socially benign.
Daniel Dedit, thanks a lot for taking the time to speak with me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
That was Daniel Dedit, Tufts University Professor of Philosophy. And next we have Richard Dawkins, author of The God Delusion and the Selfish Gene. Dawkins holds a chair for the public understanding of science at Oxford University. You know him, you love him. He's even been a character on South Park. Duncan talks to Richard Dawkins.
Professor Dawkins, I think some of the most provocative comments so far were made by Mr. Sam Harris last night. He was talking about the term atheist and how he adopted the term sort of by circumstance, yes, and that he would prefer not to be called an atheist. Do you have any reactions to some of his comments?
There are many people who object to the word atheist because they think it's provocative and puts people's backs up. And I think that's not what he was really talking about, or only very slightly. I think he was sort of saying that if you use the word atheist, you play into their hands in a way, and a better way to do it is to pick off, as it were with sniper fire, particular issues of irrationality, rather than say, I'm an atheist and I'm against all religion. It's a better political tactic, maybe, to say this particular thing is irrational. Opposition to stem cell research is irrational. Opposition to early-term abortion is irrational. And go for each individual, or creationism is irrational, intelligent design is irrational. Go for each individual one, picking them off, rather than say, I'm an atheist, which then lays you vulnerable to being to having to defend everybody who's ever been an atheist or whatever it might be. So that's different from saying that the word atheism is provocative and offensive. And I think he was making a very interesting point, and I'm still thinking about my reaction to it.
Mr. Harris made some comments about organized atheism and the atheist movement itself. What do you feel about the value of organized atheism? And here you are speaking at the Atheist Alliance International. Do you feel these organizations have a value to society and rationality?
Yes, I think reluctantly we have to admit that they do. And I think that we are, especially in America, we're in a situation where we do need some organization. I look forward to a time, as Sam Harris does, when that kind of organization will no longer be necessary. And as he said, none of us call ourselves a-racists. Maybe in apartheid South Africa, it would have been necessary to do that. And the time has now come in South Africa where it's no longer necessary. But let's hope the time does come when it's no longer necessary to bother to call yourself an atheist any more than nowadays we call ourselves a-thorists or a-zeusists.
We couldn't hear your whole talk down here in the press room, but I understand you addressed some comments made by Greg Epstein, the humanist chaplain at Harvard. Some of the ways that people refer to you and some of your peers, the new atheists is a term. Let me just begin with that. Do you like the term new atheist? Where'd that come from?
Well, I don't know where it comes from. Once again, I think it's something that we reluctantly have to live with, and it's probably a pretty good public relations consciousness raising term. So I'm not fighting against it.
So to follow about some of Epstein's work, he's the humanist chaplain at Harvard.
I didn't actually give very much. I mean, I didn't mention him by name, I don't think. Maybe I had his name on a slide. It was more just a generic look at some of the objections that people have raised, like, why are you so strident? And the answer is, we're not. We only seem strident because people have got so used to the idea that religion gets a free pass, that you don't criticize religion, that even the very slightest criticism, something that wouldn't even be noticed in political discourse, for example, if you're criticizing Bush, say, nobody would notice it, and nobody would dream of calling it strident. But if you say something even the tiniest bit negative about religion, people think it's strident and shrill. The other thing, of course, is that many people just simply haven't read the book. I mean, they've read the title or read what somebody else has said about it.
So to follow up along that line, though, what this chaplain is doing at Harvard is trying to incorporate some of the aspects of organized religion, the singing and almost the rhetoric, you know, and I just want, the main question is, do you think that religion needs to be eliminated and replaced with atheism, or do you think that religion should be reformed to the point where, say, it is in Europe, some of the Church of England, it's not even clear that they're necessarily believers?
I'm not myself going to get involved in chanting and singing and ritual and things like that. I think it's rather pathetic if people need that. Maybe people do. But I mean, for special cases like funerals and marriages, one needs something. But you can do that with poetry. You can do that with music. I'm not a great fan of somebody who tries to cozy up to liberal rabbis and things and sort of and Church of England vicars and sort of say, well, it doesn't really matter whether we actually believe in God. What matters is we're all good pals and things. I think it actually is a genuinely important question whether there is, as a matter of fact, a God. And to me, that's a big question. To other people, it's clearly a rather subsidiary question to whether everybody's happy and jolly together.
You made the announcement in your talk on yesterday that the Richard Dawkins Foundation now has charitable status in the United States and in Britain. And I would just like to ask you, what's next for the foundation?
Well, it's a great milestone for us. It's been about 18 months of trying to get charitable status, which must be a record, I think. We've done it in both countries because the charitable tax laws are quite different in the two countries. And so now it should be easy by legal means to transfer money from one to the other. So, for example, if somebody in America wants to give money to a charity in Britain, they can do so by the sort of conduit provided by our two charities in a tax-efficient way. Similarly, if a donor in Britain wants to give money to an American charity, which I, by the way, have often done in the past, and it's been terribly difficult. I mean, when I wanted to give some money to the James Randi Foundation, for example, I had to jump through all kinds of hoops in order to do it in a tax-efficient way. So one of the things my foundation is going to do with its dual stance on opposite sides of the Atlantic is make that kind of thing easier. So we'll be giving money, if we raise money, we'll be giving money to other charities that are doing good things. We'll be things like disaster relief, famine relief, that kind of thing. I think many would-be donors are reluctant to give money if they think it might fall into the hands of missionaries, which it often does. And so one of the things we hope to do is maintain a sort of database of charities which are certified clean of missionaries, and so encourage people to give via us to them. We're also running a website which contains a lot of information, and you may have seen it. The foundation website is richarddawkinsfoundation.org, and we have another website, richarddawkins.net, which is not officially part of the foundation, and probably better not be, I think.
Where I work, the Institute for Humanist Studies, we're going to pass the $1 million mark for grants given away to to charitable organizations throughout the world. I came across a statistic, though, in the U.S. Last year, $97 billion. Americans gave $97 billion to religion. Yes. It was astounding. So I guess this isn't so much of a question, but congratulations for your work.
Well, I've seen pie charts of that. I mean, it's the most astonishing thing. I suppose it's mostly tithes, isn't it? I mean, they give 10% of their income to people like Ted Haggard, and that's what swelled those figures. Yes, it's very sad.
Last night, you mentioned that you might be working on a children's book in the future. Would you care to share any more information about that?
I haven't started it, and I haven't really given very much thought to what it might consist of, but I do think that might be the next logical step.
A final question. You've been interviewed hundreds, maybe thousands of times. Is there something that reporters do not ask you that you wish they would? Is there something you want to talk about that people just don't talk? They pigeonhole you.
I should have been given notice of that question. I certainly get asked the same thing very, very many times. You haven't asked the same thing, actually. So thank you very much for that. No, I'll have to have notice of that question. I can't think of anything that I haven't been asked that I should have been.
Professor Dawkins, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for granting this interview.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure for me, too.
This is Pastor Deacon Fred from the Landover Baptist Church, and you're listening to the Humanist Network News. And I'll tell you what, you either shut this thing off right now, you're going to burn in hell.
We'll be hearing from that man later on in our show. Before that, we were listening to my interview with Professor Richard Dawkins. For more information about Professor Dawkins and his foundation, you can visit richarddawkinsfoundation.org or also visit richarddawkins.net. During the interview, Professor Dawkins said that he wasn't a big fan of ceremonies. However, he did participate in a humanist naming ceremony of the children of Matt Sherry, the executive director of the Institute for Humanist Studies. That was Sunday at the AAI conference, and you can read about that in the Washington Post Newsweek blog, which is called On Faith.
So, Duncan, were people like mowing you down, trying to get to Dawkins or what?
Yes, they were. Picture William Shatner at a Star Trek convention, okay?
Nice.
And I'm throwing elbows with these guys. I mean, everybody with, you know, who has a blog was trying to get to them. I was just trying to play cool and stay back. So there was a lot of waiting around. Didn't get the chance to interview Ayaan Hirsi Ali, but I did rub elbows with a lot of really big, scary-looking
bodyguards.
Yeah. I had to twice make arrangements to interview Christopher Hitchens. The first time I found him down in the bar. Nice. Where I had retreated, and he agreed to do the interview in 5 minutes, and then I got bumped by.
This morning in Virginia, a large convention of atheists is gathered. Men, women, children who all proclaim that God does not exist. Here's ABC's Liz Marlantis.
Jess is bumping me right now by ABC World News. Somehow they were able to cut the line and get Hitchens. I don't know. Humanist Network News, ABC World News, whatever. Good morning, America. Anyway, I finally did catch up with Christopher Hitchens in the bar Saturday night, and he agreed to do the interview and to speak over the Muzak in the background.
And though I know it's very unsatisfactory, I believe that the confrontation with the term is inescapable. In other words, one is going to be asked, either out of curiosity or out of hostility, are you an atheist? And the term has a common understanding that's shared by now a very, very large number of speakers of English and other languages too, where to say yes means I do not believe in a creator God or an intervening God. And thus, I think it's idle to expect that one can dodge the question as it will be presented in that form. And I'm perfectly content to say yes to that question, in whatever tone of voice it is asked of me. I will add that, in fact, I'm an anti-theist. I don't just disbelieve in these propositions, but I think that the proposition is a horrible one. I'm glad it isn't true, glad there is no evidence for it. But I don't do this for purposes of spin or evasion. And I think any attempt to duck the question is doomed.
Your books and the books of your peers who are featured in this conference have probably done more to conscious raising for the issues of atheism than atheist organizations, I would have to admit. And I want to know your opinion of organized atheism. What are your thoughts about conferences like this and groups like Atheist Alliance International?
I have to say, personally, I don't feel the need of a support group of any kind, and never have. Never joined the previous American Atheist organization, Madeline Murray O'Hare, which I thought from the evidence of some of its publications had a slightly cultish aspect to it. But I think it is a wholesome thing, the resonance of the word atheist now attaches itself to names like Ayaan Hirsi Ali, Daniel Dennett, Richard Dawkins, and Sam Harris, than with Madeline Murray O'Hare. That is a qualitative step forward, but I could go from one ear end to the next without ever attending a conference of like-minded people. In the introduction of my book, the opening of my book, I make a very sharp point about this to say that it is one of the distinctions of our belief that it doesn't require continual reinforcement or ceremonial or solidarity. It's you recognize a fellow unbeliever when you meet them, wherever they are, whatever time of day it is. You don't require to get together and chant what you don't believe. And that distinction is important to me in other ways, too.
Do you think that some people are too skeptical for their own good, some skeptics?
No, I think something else, which is that there's a tendency. I didn't see it very strongly marked this weekend, but I know there is a tendency for unbelievers to regard their own civil rights as a problem. Now, for me, it's not a civil rights question. It's we are arguing for unbelief against theocracy and against superstition. We can expect to be disliked for it, or feared sometimes, or despised. That's, if you like, part of it. Our own civil rights are not theists. We are not an oppressed minority and shouldn't act with self-pity or complaint as if we were. Obviously, if there's a case in even a small county of a remote state where someone might have to challenge, there are local laws sometimes that say those who won't swear on the Bible can't be appointed to office. That's flat out unconstitutional, but it would be for believers, I thought, to take that up and say, well, the Constitution quite explicitly forbids a religious test for public office. It shouldn't be our complaint that we are victims.
Christopher Hitchens, thank you for taking the time to speak with me.
Pleasure. Thank you for asking.
You're listening to the Humanist Network News. I'm your host, Duncan Crary.
And I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
So that was my interview with Christopher Hitchens. Now, during the Atheist Alliance International Conference, Christopher Hitchens did make some controversial remarks about the Iraq War and about invading Iran. I think a week later at the Freedom From Religion Foundation Conference, Hitchens echoed those remarks and took them up a notch, speaking about invading Iran, killing Muslims.
It's probably one of the reasons why Salman Rushdie at his talk at the New Humanist Conference said that, I love him. He's one of my friends, but I don't agree with a lot of what he says.
The blogosphere is abuzz with commentary. I wasn't there. So citizen journalists, you can do your own research.
Duncan, we've heard from Dawkins, Dennett, and Hitchens about their reactions to Harris's talk. Mm-hmm. What did some of the other conference goers have to say?
Well, there was one woman who, before his talk, was telling me what a huge fan of Sam Harris she was, and after the talk, she vowed to throw his books into the garbage.
Interesting. That sounds kind of familiar, doesn't
it?
Yeah,
it sounds a little bit like those fundamentalist Christians who go around burning books and drive over rap CDs with bulldozers. Anyway, Ellen Johnson, the president of American Atheists, published her formal response to Sam Harris's talk in the Humanist Network News e-zine, humanistnetworknews.org. And one of the first people to jump up during Sam Harris's talk and comment was Kelly M. from the Rational Response Squad. This is the group famous for the Blasphemy Challenge on YouTube and also for debating Kirk Cameron of the Way of the Master on Dateline NBC. I talked to Brian and Kelly on Saturday.
Okay, I'm with Brian Sapien and Kelly M. of the Rational Response Squad, and you've been here for the Atheist Alliance International Conference, and I'd like to ask you your reactions to Sam Harris's talk. Kelly, what is your reaction to Sam Harris's statement about using the term atheist?
My first reaction was, please shut up so I can, like, ask you this question right now. unfortunately, I had to wait until he was done, but I even specifically asked him why, like, while I agree with his concept and the idea that having a label for the non-belief in a particular thing really should be almost silly. And, I mean, he used examples such as racism and, you know, you don't have to call yourself an a-racist or an anti-racist, and that atheism should be no different. But at the same time, and, you know, like I pointed out to him, every movement at some point in time goes through this period of change where people who are opposed to that kind of belief system or practice or whatever it is have to come out and assert themselves. And they've always had to take the negative stance, you know, like, I mean, in the 20s, it was prohibition, you know, or the abolitionists during slavery, or, I mean, the civil rights movement, or, I mean, you know, whatever the deal is. And so essentially to get to the place where atheism is a word that we don't need to use anymore, we need to identify ourselves as that and, you know, coalesce into a movement that is capable of affecting that kind of change.
Brian, did you have any reactions you'd like to share?
Well, I just think, you know, obviously he was basically saying that we shouldn't use the word atheist. And I think that, and I was just using Black as an example, and Graydon Square, you know, rapper, is, you know, wearing a shirt today that says, that I'm the Black Carl Sagan, but yet there's a negative stigma attached to that word, and just as if there's a negative stigma attached to the word atheist. But yet Black people embrace the word and don't care because it factually represents who they are. And so if you are a non-believer, atheist factually represents who you are. And I worry that we end up segmenting ourselves into like 30 different definable terms. And I don't think that Christians or Muslims hate us because of the word atheist. I think they hate us because of what we believe. And when they figure out that humanist means atheist, or that, you know, bright means atheist, and I recognize that it doesn't exactly mean that, but, you know, at the core, that's generally what it is. When they figure that out, they start to have a negative reaction to it. In fact, for the first time, searching online, you start seeing people talk about agnostics and with this negative stigma that they, the same way they've used the word atheist as a slur for a long time, I'm starting to see it with agnostic. And so now agnostic is being hated on. So now, you know, I think that we run the risk of like being recognized as intellectually dishonest if we pull those sort of routines. And how can you get somebody to change or abandon, you know, their entire belief system, what they were raised and grown up in and indoctrinated into, if they at some point, at any point, suspect you of being intellectually dishonest with them?
Well, that raises an interesting question, because Sam Harris told me, and I don't know if he said it in his talk or not, that he appreciates the Richard Dawkins Foundation for Science and Reason. It's not the Richard Dawkins Foundation for Atheism. And he was advocating for using words like reason, rationality. You're the Rational Response Squad, so you're one of the few groups that wouldn't have to order new business cards if Harris convinced you. But do you feel that you might be corrupting the word? People might figure out that ration and reason are code words for atheism.
Well, yeah, essentially we'll vilify the entire English language. You know, I mean, the more words we use to define ourselves to avoid using the big bad A word, the more they'll just hate more words, you know, and it'll be silly. Like, yeah, I mean, Sam Harris has said publicly that he supports us as an organization. And we always like to tell people that even though we might fight most against religion, it's only because religion is probably the most dangerous meme floating around in society, and it's also the most prevalent. But the thing that we're really opposed to is the lack of rationality, reason, and critical thinking that leads people to religion. and that really what we want to do is promote that. So, I mean, as far as that goes, I mean, we're right in line with what he's saying. But I'm not going to abandon the use of the word atheist because it might make people not like me.
You know, Duncan, I didn't even think about it until you just said it, and you actually just made my point for me and actually debunked Harris's argument. I've heard rational used as a slur against us. I never really put it together until now, until you just said that. But I mean, I really have, and I can't count how many times or the ways really. I mean, I might go back and check, but I really don't think it's the word that we use to call ourselves. And I think the most important thing is that, you know, I think it's really a shame that I have a feeling like you saw some poll a while ago, like 80% of Americans doubt the literal existence of a God. Okay, well, that would mean if that's true, that would make 80% of our American population like agnostic or atheist or both. All right. And so it's like, why we're so segmented in all these different groups. We might already be the majority. We just don't even know it because we have 50 names for who we are, you know?
I'm not an atheist. I'm a bright.
We heard
well,
who's,
I'm a
what
humanist. Well,
night?
I'm a free thinker.
Conscientious evolutioner. What was, what did she call herself?
Oh, do, evolutionary con, or, oh, I don't even remember.
What was her name last night?
Like conscious evolutionist or some shit. I think it was conscious evolutionist or some.
She's like, if somebody asked her if she believed in God, I don't even remember how stupid it was. It was just like, no, I'm a consciousness evolutioner. It's like, what? What are you?
Well, Sam Harris is on his way up here right now to speak with you, so I'm going to wrap this up. But can you give me a little preview of what you expect to talk with Sam Harris about?
Probably exactly what we just talked to you about.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about this. I mean, you know, at the core, I mean, we agree with most everything that Sam says. And the most important thing is to speak out. And that's really the most important thing. And if some people can't handle the usage of a word, then yeah, I think it's important as well. But it's not as important. And Sam's obviously an extremely important figure. And we hope to have, a bunch of things that we can agree on, which we already know Sam supports us and we support him. So
yeah, we like to focus more on the points on which we agree than the ones on which we disagree. Like, for example, we had, you know, Daniel Dennett and Richard Dawkins both up here earlier today. And personally, we both dislike the term bright. And
we didn't even touch
we,
it.
You know, whatever. That's their thing and they can have their thing and we have our thing. But the fact is that we all want to end religion and, you know, so that's what we want to really get together with these people to do.
Thanks a lot for taking the time to speak with me.
You're welcome.
Hey, can I say one thing?
Humanists.
I just want to say one thing to all the humanists out there.
You're an atheist. Just deal with it.
No. Seriously, we support your right to start the Chicken Shit Atheist Group of America. And we hope that you support our right to start the Rational Response Squad. And if you want to come to us with a website, which Kelly is thinking about starting first as a parody site called the Chicken Shit Atheists of America. If you want to start it, we will gladly support you and link to it as long as you support us for speaking out loudly and boldly.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot.
50% of this son of a Bush nation is like hating on Haiti and setting up assassinations. Ask Pat Robinson, quiz him. Smells like terrorism. Racism in the news, still one-sided views.
Well, I'm sure we've all heard of the Rational Responders Blasphemy Challenge, where they're looking for YouTube videos of folks denying the Holy Spirit. You can get more information about that at rationalresponders.com. But it looks like now we've got yet another challenge from the Rational Responders. What do you think?
A little glove slapping, I think, is going on.
So listeners, give us a call at 1-877-659-1515. That's our new toll-free number.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us what you think.
Well, we've heard from the atheist reaction to Sam Harris's talk and the conference. Now we're going to hear from a religious attendee at the conference. This man claims to represent the largest, most powerful assembly of worthwhile people ever to exist. Pastor Deacon Fred, the high minister of the Landover Baptist Church, what brings you to the Atheist Alliance International Conference?
Well, I'm here because I heard they were holding their convention in Crystal Meth City, and I couldn't resist. You see, I'm always up for a challenge. And like anything else, my friends will tell you I can sell a sin to Satan. So that's why I'm here. I heard also from creation science researchers at Landover Baptist Home for the Demonically Possessed, after they carefully examined the entrails of an unblemished goat, told me that there's a new virus on the loose, a deadly virus, and it's called atheism, and it's corrupting our country. And like everything unholy, it's coming from the Brits, from overseas, the same tea-sipping Nancy boys that brought us Andrew Lloyd Webber and his pack of prancing homosexual cats.
Have you had a chance to speak with Professor Dawkins or Mr. Sam Harris or Christopher Hitchens?
I have supped with the sinners. I have spoken with them and listened to their so-called intellectual record. My opinion is these folks read too many books. There's only one book you need to read, and that's the Holy Bible, King James 1611, 10-pound version. The only thing that's going to knock any sense into Richard Dawkins is if somebody whacks him upside the head with a Bible. Get the demons out of there. I don't know what they teach those folks down in those English schools, Harry Potter. You know, the only thing that's missing from the Harry Potter book, come to think of it, is sodomy. A little light sodomy, because sodomy in England is just as common as a handshake is in the United States. Oh, glory.
Have you converted any? Have you saved any souls?
Well, this fellow Sam Harris opened the hearts and minds of some folks here, so I used that as an opportunity to hone in on the sinners. Oh, yes. Anytime they're vulnerable, I bring the Holy Spirit and the little baby Jesus, and I just get right in their faces, and I say, did you know that Jesus loves you? And they say, well, they don't believe in Jesus. I said, he loves you, but if you don't love him back, well, he's going to fry your good-for-nothing unsaved ass in the eternal hellfire.
Would you like to say a prayer for the listeners of the Humanist Network News? Perhaps you'll reach a few of them.
Yes. Lord, thank you for not killing the members of the Humanist Network News Network and flinging their lifeless corpses into the flames of the sadistic hell you created for everyone who doesn't flatter you. Amen.
Amen.
Hi, this is Melanie from the band Circe. You're listening to Humanist Network News.
I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
And I'm your host, Duncan Crary. Now, the band Circe has followed many acts, but I'm not sure if they've ever followed an act quite like that one. Pastor Deacon Fred of the Landover Baptist Church can learn more about that congregation at landoverbaptist.org.
Newsflash, Fred. Dumbledore is gay. J.K. Rowling officially outed him.
Yes. So we can expect a little light sodomy in the Harry Potter and the Secret Chalice Chamber, number 12. Well, last month we had a question posed by Tom for Sweet Reason about coming out as an atheist. Tom is...
Tom's from the softer side of the rational responders, if you will.
And Maureen Matsumara visited the Humanist Center in Albany, so here she is.
I'm here with Maureen Matsumara, the voice of Sweet Reason, the famous humanist advice column. Maureen, thank you so much for joining us here at the Humanist Center in Albany, New York.
I'm really glad to be here. You've even got good tea.
Yeah, well, we have good tea, but I thought you were going to bring the California sunshine. And
too bad.
So, Maureen... last month, we aired a question from a young man named Tom about coming out as an atheist. He had a question for you about how to come out to his family and loved ones and let them know that he is an atheist. And he's concerned about doing that the proper way.
What would be the best way to give somebody a different feeling about atheists? Or humanists, how do you sort of come in acknowledging that there's probably a very strong reaction that will occur at the dropping of that word? And so how can you numb that down a little bit, dumb it down a little bit?
Do you have any advice for Tom?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it, and the advice sort of breaks out like a newspaper column. There's a when, a who, and a what. And the when is that the sooner the better, I think, for Tom, because mm-hmm. the Rational Response Squad is so public. You know, they've been on TV. They're all over the internet. Someone in his family is going to find out sooner or later, and it's better if they hear it from him.
So, Marlene, this might be a dumb question, but what is the danger of having one of Tom's loved ones find out that he's an atheist, say, on Dateline NBC or something?
Because the way they hear it from anyone else is going to be less gentle than the way they would hear it from him. It's going to come as a shock, and then he's going to have to deal with, why didn't you tell me?
Yeah. Okay. So what's part two?
Well, part two is who to tell. You know, in any family, there's people who are going to have different reactions. And you learn to know who you should tell your secret, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You're gay. You've been dating someone of a different ethnic group. Mm-hmm. You like dogs in a cat-loving family. There's right. some people who are more sympathetic and are prepared to run interference for you with the rest of the family. Mm-hmm. It might be your mother who is calmer than your father, or one sibling who's more supportive than another who is always picking on you.
Yeah.
So if he thinks about who would listen most just because they love him, that's where to start. And he can even say to them, I'm starting with you because I'm trying to figure out how to deal with the rest of the family.
Yeah. Okay, well, Tom did speak with us about his Atheist Volunteers project, and I was wondering if that maybe plays into part three of your advice.
Duncan, you read my mind.
Well, I've been reading your columns long enough to know maybe where you're going.
Yeah, well, I think that people in his family are probably just like the rest of the public. They've heard all kinds of things about atheists. Mm-hmm. And besides which, if they find out about the rational responders don't pull any punches in their atheism. Mm. So they might have all those negative perceptions that Tom is worried about. But if he begins by saying, yeah, I've been doing some volunteer work lately. I'm trying to get people to donate blood. That's one of the rational responders projects. Mm-hmm. Eventually, the person who's, we hope, the chosen person who understands him will say, well, what's the name of it? And then Tom says, sit down first.
Yeah.
And he says, well, it's Atheist Volunteers. I felt it was about time that people around us understood that we're really good people.
Yeah.
Then he set the tone of the conversation already.
Yeah. I think that's wonderful advice, Marlene. Let me ask you some advice for maybe some of the other people who listened to Tom's question and interview who are upset that he's hiding in the closet with his atheism, or, you know, he said that he's kind of playing the role of Clark Kent in a way, like, you know, super atheist volunteer by night and mild-mannered Tom by day. What's your advice to the listeners who are angry that that there are atheists in the closet?
Oh, my name is John Vanderplaw. I'm an atheist in Chicago. And I wanted to express my disappointment in Tom on the September program. It seems that he's trying to help the world see atheists as honest people while not being honest with himself and with his loved ones. And this distresses me because it exemplifies the perception that atheism is bad behavior. If that's necessarily the message that you want to be sending out to the people you're trying to get to volunteer for your causes. You know, the truth is, it's not a hobby. Movement, the humanist movement works best as a civil rights issue, not as anti-establishment stance for, I don't know, that's just my take on it.
Help them out. Be if you're outspoken already, then present a nice public face, or at least an honest one. There are lots of reasons people have to be in the closet, and you can't judge them. They might have a job to protect. There might be the thing that comes to my mind as a mother is that they don't want rocks thrown at their kids at school.
Yeah.
Okay, so when you don't know the circumstances of another person's life, you can't really say what they should do, but you can make it easier for them to do what you think they should do.
Well, Marlene Matsumura, Sweet Reason, always sound, compassionate advice. Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
It was my pleasure, Duncan.
That was Marlene Matsumura, a.k.a. Sweet Reason.
A.k.a. Jess's grandmother.
I don't know. Every time I hear a voice, Duncan, she reminds me of my grandmother.
Jess was very eager to hug Marlene on her visit.
I really enjoyed meeting her.
You can read Maureen Matsumara's humanist advice column, Sweet Reason, in the Humanist Network News e-zine at humanistnetworknews.org.
You can leave your own question for Sweet Reason at our toll-free listener comment line, 877-659-1515.
And don't forget to call us and tell us what you think about this program.
That's right. You can look for transcripts and show notes from previous episodes at humaniststudies.org/podcast.
Our theme music was generously donated by Holly Near. You can learn more about her at hollynear.com.
And before we forget, happy Halloween, right?
Happy Halloween, folks. Don't let the fundamentalists or the witches scare you from having a good time.
And we're going to take the show out with a song by Cersei called Oh Billy.
I'm your host, Duncan Crary.
And I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
Thanks for listening. The Humanist Network News podcast is made possible by the Institute for Humanist Studies, a nonprofit think tank that promotes the philosophy of humanism.
Hi, I'm Nancy Buxton, and I'm the development coordinator at the Institute for Humanist Studies. It's my job to raise money for the Institute's programs, like the Humanist Network News podcast that you're listening to. If this were public radio instead of a podcast, you'd hear a week-long begathon 4 times a year. I'll spare you that if you can spare 4 minutes of your time. As Duncan said during his interview with Professor Richard Dawkins on this month's show, Americans donated $97 billion to religious organizations last year. Think about that number for a second. It's huge. The good news is that charitable donations to humanist organizations are on the rise, but we have a long way to go to ensure that our voice of reason and compassion is taken seriously around the world. The Institute for Humanist Studies doesn't charge membership dues or any fees for its programming. Our online courses are free. Our weekly e-zine, our podcast, our parenting resources are all free. We make those programs free so that anyone in the world, especially those in the developing world, can access the important information that we provide. But that means that the Institute for Humanist Studies is entirely dependent on people like you to get out their checkbook or their credit card and donate to the work we're doing. Since you're already familiar with the Humanist Network News podcast, you know what a great little show this is. I mean, Duncan and Jess are really giving you their all. I'd like you to listen to this clip one more time. It's Richard Dawkins speaking with Duncan.
You've been interviewed hundreds, maybe thousands of times. Is there something that reporters do not ask you that you wish they would? Is there something you want to talk about that people just don't talk? They pigeonhole you.
I should have been given notice of that question. I certainly get asked the same thing very, very many times. You haven't asked the same thing, actually. So thank you very much for that. No, I'll have to have notice of that question. I can't think of anything that I haven't been asked that I should have been.
Duncan told me something about interviewing famous people. He said that if you don't ask them something new, then you're really just interviewing that person for bragging rights. You're not adding anything to the greater discussion. We like to joke that these interviews are done with duct tape microphones and Fisher-Price recorders. It's not that bad, but wouldn't it be great if we could buy Jess and Duncan the kind of equipment that a show like this deserves? To make a tax-deductible donation to the Institute for Humanist Studies, visit humaniststudies.org/support. Or if you have any questions, you can email me at N, as in Nancy, B-U-X-T-O-N, @humaniststudies.org.